resulting in every observation being trailed by a reaction to the observer. No matter how much care the author takes, the first-person ethnography becomes just as much about the field worker as about anything she or he saw. I have sat through countless conversations about a work of ethnography or reportage that have nothing to do with the book's subject matter and everything to do with its author's decisions or mistakes or ethical character. And after almost every academic talk I have given on the material in this book, I have been asked questions like, how did you feel when you saw that? How did you gain this sort of access? These are fine questions, but there is bigger game afoot. There is an enormous amount of pain and poverty in this rich land. At a time of rampant inequality and widespread hardship, when hunger and homelessness are found throughout America, I am interested in a different, more urgent conversation. I don't matter. I hope that when you talk about this book, you talk first about Sharina and Tobin, Arlene and Jory, Lorraine and Scott and Pam, Crystal and Vanetta, and the fact that somewhere in your city, a family has just been evicted from their home, their things piled high on the sidewalk. There are costs to abandoning the first person. In the context of this study, it meant disguising when I intervened in non-trivial ways. There are two such instances in this book. When a friend rented Arlene a U-Haul truck to move from 13th Street, and when Vanetta borrowed money from a friend to buy a stove and refrigerator in anticipation of a visit from Child Protective Services, that was me. It is also important to recognize that none of the tenants in this book had a car. I did. And I sometimes drove people around when they were looking for housing. When I didn't, people relied on Milwaukee's irregular bus system or set off on foot. It would have taken families much longer to find subsequent housing if they hadn't had access to my car or phone. I didn't pay people for interviews or for their time. People asked me for money because they asked everyone for money. I stopped carrying a wallet and learned how to say no like everyone around me did. If I had a few dollars on me, I'd sometimes give it. But as a rule, I didn't give out large sums. In Milwaukee, people bought me food and I bought them food. People bought me gifts and I bought them gifts. The Hingstons once sent me into their basement to see if I couldn't bang the furnace back to life. When I emerged, unsuccessful, I found a birthday cake waiting for me. Once, Arlene bought me a tin of cookies and one of those cards that play a silly song. We kept it in my car and would open it when we needed a laugh. Scott still sends my eldest son a birthday card with a $10 bill tucked inside, just like he did when he was homeless. The harder feat for any field worker is not getting in. It's leaving. And the more difficult ethical dilemma is not how to respond when asked to help, but how to respond when you are given so much. I have been blessed by countless acts of generosity from the people I met in Milwaukee. Each one reminds me how gracefully they refuse to be reduced to their hardships. Poverty has not prevailed against their deep humanity. This is Dion Graham. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City by Matthew Desmond. This program was directed by Mae Wetherich. Executive producer Dan Zitt. Text copyright 2016 by Matthew Desmond. Production copyright 2016, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.